everybody. Welcome to another episode of What You Doin' Podcast, where I talk to cool people about the amazing things that they're making. Today, I'm sitting down with Riley Coyote from Afterthought Committee, talking about their new project on Kickstarter, Every Villain is a Loser. The preview for this game grabbed me right away. I was so excited to sit down and talk to Riley about it. Such a neat, specific style of play that Riley was seeking to emulate, and just really crushed it, I think. And with that, let's get on with it.
I notice you have To Write Love on Our Arms stuff.
Yeah.
We used to work with them when I was in a band.
Hell yeah.
They were like one of our main charity groups that we worked with.
Yeah. I'm from Florida, so...
Oh, no way.
Yeah. I've been raising money for them, doing streaming stuff for like 4 or 5 years.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. They're a super cool group that I love raising money for, and it's a fucking amazing cause. As a survivor, mm-hmm. It's an amazing cause. I'm very happy to do it. Okay. The light looks good. Let's stop doing this. Yeah, I accidentally took a nap on the couch. Like, I was just sitting there like this. Mm-hmm. And then I had that moment, you know? And I was like, uh-oh, all right, let's get up and walk around a little. And
that happens to me every day.
I hate it. And it's like, my wife was like, well, if you think you need a nap, maybe you should take a little nap. And I'm like, no, because the nap will ruin me.
Oh, that's my side of things. I'm always like, even the slightest bit of a yawn, I'm like, it's nap time.
I'm too like antsy to take a nap. Like, it takes so much for me to like get ready, you know, like get into the groove.
Yeah, the whole like phase is more effort than it's worth.
Yeah.
By the time you're actually falling asleep, a couple hours has already passed.
And right. It's like, I've laid here for 45 minutes and I haven't slept and I've just wasted 45 minutes. I could, you know.
Right. I get it.
But that is that's my superpower. I say all the time, my superpower is I can fall asleep anywhere if I need to sleep. Mm-hmm. Like once it's
if you really need to.
Once it's sleep time, done.
Mm-hmm.
Off.
Nice.
It's great. Okay. Yeah. This is how these go, and I love it. I love the jump in, start chatting.
Oh yeah.
You know? No, I love people that can make podcasts that are like super professional sounding and they're big professional interviewers, and that's great. I love that for them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm too chill. Like I'm trying to be like, I should have, I'm professional. I should have a structure, you know, and I'm writing down questions and stuff. I'm not completely freewheeling, but then at a certain point, it's just like, man, whatever, you know?
Yeah. There's no need to corporatize, you know,
at a certain point,
keep things relaxed.
At a certain point, like I'm talking to a Yeti on a Discord call. Like maybe I can relax a little bit.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to What You Doin' Podcast. I'm Matt. Today, I'm sitting down with Riley talking about Every Villain is a Loser. Riley, say hi.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for you sort of reaching out. So Every Villain is a Loser is a Zine Month project. I was reaching out to a ton of Zine Month people because let me tell you, there is no shortage of cool projects going on during Zine
Month. Tell me about it.
It is ridiculous. I feel like I saw a whole bunch of them leading up to it. And then as it's come out, as it's been going, I feel like they're tricking me. And every day someone is launching a new project that they're like, oh, you thought it was all of them? No, we got another one.
Yeah. Oh, they're fully doubling like overnight.
Right. Like, ah, psych. I just didn't. I've never talked about this until this moment. But here's another one.
Mm-hmm.
And Riley's doing one of them. Every Villain is Evil. Riley, why don't you go ahead? Quick bio of you and the game.
Yeah, so my name is Riley Coyote. I've been running Afterthought Committee, which is an independent publisher that tries to highlight people that aren't getting as many opportunities as they should, or maybe people who aren't sure if this whole publishing thing is for them and just need some support in getting their first project done. And our latest book, Every Villain is a Loser, is something I've been playing around with for a couple of years now. It started off as a shit post on Twitter. And I just kept thinking about it and kept thinking about it and kept thinking about it. And finally I woke up one day and said, you know what? I have to write this down and I have to like make it a reality. So, essentially, if you've seen Venture Brothers, you probably know where this is going, but, the dynamic between the henchmen in that show is just always so funny and so absurd that I wanted to capture that sort of energy and create a game where you play as the minions or the lackeys to villains that are totally in, comparable and just like constantly getting their butts kicked and never, you know, having their day in the sun, and telling the story of the people who work for them. So yeah, that's basically, you know, the elevator pitch there is, what if you were working for a really crappy supervillain and, what would your life look like?
Hell yeah. Listen, a lot of really good ideas have come about because of shitposts.
Oh,
or,
for sure.
You know, just like, what, it, you know, it's a lot of really good ideas that I think people discard because they're just like, well, that'd be ridiculous. Who would do that? Right. Hey, guess what? So, you know, maybe put a little polish on that idea. Maybe it comes to something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it was. I was just like, I'm just going to make a funny little post. And then it kept me up at night for like literally a full year. And I was like, okay, this is something.
I love it.
So here we are.
That's how, you know, this podcast started for years. I said, you know, I would love to have a show where I just talk to people about the stuff they made, because I feel like I'm surrounded by and just always in spaces with people who are doing cool stuff, making cool stuff, you know, working on mm-hmm. cool stuff. And I'm like, it would be really fun to like put my energy to helping highlight those people and, you know, have them talk about the production, the creation, their inspirations, all of this stuff. And like, I just had that idea for years and would say that to myself, like, it'd be so cool to do it. And I put it on social media once and someone was like, well, then fucking do it. And I was like,
just do it.
All right. Shit. Damn. Fine.
Yeah, you're going to be like that.
And there you go. It literally took someone going, do it, stupid. And just like, all right. Okay. Sounds like, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's funny. This project has somebody like that. I don't know if you follow Keegan EXE.
Yeah, Keegan.
Yeah, Keegan was basically like my first cheerleader in this idea and recommended a book to me that was like a similar sort of what if, you know, henches were part of like a temp agency, I think is how that story went.
Yeah.
And yeah, they were just like, oh, you've definitely got to, you know, read this book and I would love to see this game exist. And I was like, okay, like reading the book and talking to them about it, I was like, I think there's something special here.
I think yeah, this was a shit post. I think we're onto something.
Yeah. But yeah, I definitely owe this book to Keegan.
I love that. People discount. I don't think people discount. I think people undervalue the impact or underestimate the value that just somebody being a cheerleader, somebody being excited for you to work on something, you know, someone just saying like, hey, that sounds like a good idea. You know, you should do it if you want to talk about it. You know, it's come up a couple times talking about Zine Month stuff, Zine Month Quest, mm-hmm. or Zine Quest, Zine Month, Zine community in general, just mm-hmm. the work and impact and like value of the community in the scene. You know,
for sure.
And I love seeing people mobilize around Zine Month of like, here's your templates, you know, here's whatever, you know, here's your easy PDFs for layouts and all of this. And here's graphics mm-hmm. if you want it. And here's your dimensions and all. And it's just like, damn, when people are working towards a thing, we're unstoppable. You know, you think get five people with their head going in one direction. And that's, you know, part of why I love Zine Month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's honestly why I even got into it in the first place, is because there were so many resources and people like cheering each other on, and it made it super easy to just jump in with no experience and, you know, put something out there and get it in front of people. And yeah, the feedback ever since has been really good.
I love how many people seem to have their first TTRPG thing, at least for the last couple of years, their first thing be a Zine Month thing. I think because of exactly what you said, like the amount of friction that other people have removed for not only like creation of the thing and making sure it's in a right format or layout or whatever, but then also navigating the crowdfunding process.
Totally.
You know, because Kickstarter, from what I hear, not as easy as you might think as a person outside looking in, as yeah. maybe it looks like on the front.
It's pretty stressful. That's for sure.
I brought this up in a different interview, but I learned very recently talking to somebody that you have to physically press the button to start it. And yeah. I had to take a beat when I heard that, because that sounds like the most stressful moment of my life.
Yeah, it was I really wish that you could schedule it, because I remember setting an alarm for like 3 o'clock in the morning so that I could catch 6 o'clock on the East Coast and 2 p.m. like in Europe, and missing my alarm because I was so tired, like staying up, you know, the night before. And yeah, totally missing that window, but it's cool.
I get somebody that I talked to said like, oh, it's, you know, so you can adjust up until the last minute. You can make sure everything's absolutely perfect. I'm like, no, that's good. I'm glad they have that. Also, maybe let me lock it in and schedule it for, you know.
Exactly. And you can still edit and change things during the campaign anyway. So, you know, no harm, no foul. Mm-hmm.
But so speaking of every villain is a loser, or evil as it is stylized, the first thing that grabbed me right away was the art. Honestly, that the artistic style, I'll put for the video version, I'll put some of the stuff just immediately grabbed me as a person who, you know, I grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, that sort of pulp newspaper style was still in vogue then, you know, it was still very much a used style. So it's just amazing to see it. It immediately just jumps so hard. All of the color choices and stuff. So evocative.
Mm-hmm.
What made you decide to go with that style? What sort of specifically influenced you to pick that?
That's a great question. So essentially I knew right off the bat, like, that I would be publishing this as in a zine format, and I wanted to do like the layout and art as close to a comic book as possible, you know, so that it feels like you're reading a comic and a game at the same time. And I actually reached out to a bunch of different artists that were doing like retro comic stuff, and not a lot of them responded. And the ones that did were kind of just like, oh yeah, I can do that, but I don't really understand, you know, like what you're going for. Like, they didn't have tabletop gaming experience. But then I heard back from Frederick, who's the artist that joined the crew, and they were so ecstatic and so like immediately on board with all these ideas of their own, and like showing me references that they had pulled up before, you know, I even had a chance to share my own. And just like the energy was so perfectly matched in like how interested they were and how talented they are. And right away they're like, oh yeah, and we can do it in this golden age style, and I can, you know, ink it traditionally, like physically instead of digitally. And already like within the first week had, you know, our concept in for Bloody Mary, who's the cover villain. And yeah, just blew me away and have been such a pleasure to work with. I really owe like the visually creative stuff, it's all on them. I have aphantasia, so I can't like imagine. And they have really just been every single like submission knocking it out of the park and far surpassing my expectations. They're incredible.
That's awesome. I just love the idea of him just being like, yes, awesome, let's, you know, like not even just like, yeah, that sounds great, let's work together, but being like so enthusiastic about the process. That's awesome. Yeah.
A true collaborator. Like I've worked with a lot of artists over the years, and typically, you know, you have your pitches, your concepts, and your ask, and you say, this is what I want, and, you know, kind of do your own thing with it, and then you don't hear back from them until they submit a sketch or something, and it's kind of hands off. But yeah, with Frederick, they've been like fully collaborating with designs, with characters. They even put one of their own like original characters into the book, called Rex Comet, which is a really fascinating villain. Yeah, I love their work so much. And they even offered to do like commissions as part of the campaign. So if you wanted to get one of your own characters drawn in their style and, you know, sent to you on a nice physical card, that is an option. And they're also signing inks of the five villains that are a part of our campaign. So if you wanted to own a piece of their art, definitely recommend those tiers.
Always cool. I always love looking at a Kickstarter, especially for something that's ostensibly for a single product, you know, like a TTRPG book, where it's just like, okay, what you're getting is the book. I'm always interested in and curious as to like what extras are offered, you know, or like what fun ideas people come up with, because sometimes people come up with ideas that are just like, wow, like I would never thought about this, or I've never seen anyone else do this before. And even something like art prints is such a fun, unique idea that that art really grabs you, you know, and it's just a nice extra way to appreciate the art separate from the game.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, having definitely. getting like a custom drawn character, that's super neat.
Yeah.
I love that.
Oh yeah. I just love the idea of like someone being so into like their D&D character and then getting them like in this golden age comic book style. Cause how unique is that? Like you never see that. So I would love if somebody got some commissions, just because I want to see what Frederick comes up with, honestly.
So every villain is a loser has sort of three main ideas. I'm gonna double check the page here to make sure I get them right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The three universal truths.
Yes.
Every villain is a loser. All heroes are bastards, and you always make it out alive. And it's the third one that I'm really interested in. As how those come into play. I think the first two. We get what's going on.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the three universal truths, you know, that was the original shitpost. And it was everything that I wrote for this game kind of was born from those ideas. And you always make it out alive is one of the most important aspects of it, I think, because in order to really like dial in the absurdity of some of the stories that can be told with a game like this, the most fun part of it is figuring out, okay, if you're in a building that's falling, for example, and your supervillain and their arch nemesis are in the middle of this horrible fight that is just causing damage and destruction everywhere, and your friends, the crew who's like non-player crew, are dying left and right, how do you figure out a way out of this? And on to your next job. And yeah, just like the things that people will come up with on the fly trying to justify like surviving amidst incredible odds is beautiful to me. It's always silly. It's always absurd. It's always really fun. And yeah, it's a way to push your characters forward, because let's say your villain's going to lose. They might end up in jail. They're not going to have a crew anymore. Well, where does that leave you? Do you want to make a new character and work for a new thing? No, you take that same character who survived, and then they're going to level up and get to work for a stronger villain. And so that's how, you know, the progression system works.
I think that's why the game idea is so immediately like evocative, because it's such a like understandable moment of that, like being a henchman and seeing like, oh, he's really getting his ass kicked. We're gonna,
we're out of here.
Maybe I'm gonna leave.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is like, it's only the player characters that make it out alive. So there's plenty of opportunity for death and destruction left and right. But as a player character, obviously you have the opportunity to retire your character in death or whatever. But yeah, it's all about like the story is specifically about the players and their characters at the table.
Yeah, I love the idea of like going home, you know, just some guy going back to his suburban house, getting out of his car, taking his like shark themed costume off and like putting it in a trash bag, and then like goes to, you know, henchman like WeWork like job assignment, and they're like, all right, like, you know, Crocodask is hiring, and he's like, all right, I'll be a crocodile, whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like.
I already got the scuba tank, so, you know, it's easy.
Villains are always hiring, you know, so it's like you can't get a job at a McDonald's these days, but if you go to Enterprising Villains Investment League, you're gonna get suited up that day.
Oh, I love that. See, let your shitpost be ideas. Sometimes all they need is a little push.
Yep. Love it.
So you build Evil as a comedy TTRPG specifically. Mm-hmm. And I think a thing that comes up a lot, especially in memes, but I think sometimes in discussion too, is the sort of the friction between like comedy and drama in TTRPGs. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's seen the memes. What made you want this to be firstly a comedy TTRPG, and then what is it about this game that like makes it a comedy TTRPG specifically?
Mm-hmm. Well, I am the player that's always making jokes and doing bits, much to the detriment of everyone else at the table. Mm-hmm. And so I really just wanted to make a game for people like me. And the thing about like comedy versus drama is that great comedy really comes through drama. So like a bit isn't necessarily going to land very well unless there's drama there to support it. You know, like it can't just be all laughs all the time. There's a lot of rising and falling energy that comes there. But so I really just wanted to make a game that sort of matched the tone and style of play that I find most rewarding when you're sitting around a table with your friends and you're all cracking jokes and laughing and, you know, having a really strong reaction to like each other's sense of humor. That's just a beautiful thing. The other thing is that there's a lot of superhero games out there that don't necessarily lean in that direction. You know, they're all about saving the day or, you know, solving mysteries or, you know, power fantasy. And so, I really wanted to set this game apart from other like supers games, and lean into the comedic aspect. What really helps set that tone, I think, is that you're not playing as someone with powers. You're not playing as a villain or a hero. And because you're in this sort of like absurd system of having to support someone who's always failing, that just leads to generate lots of comedic potential, really. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned characters can level up. What is it, as you mentioned, you know, characters don't have powers, they're just everyday, you know, everyday nobodies. What does advancement look like in a game like this? What is, you know, what does leveling up look like?
Yeah, so it's basically gaining literal job experience. You know, so if you can put on your resume that you successfully robbed a bank or, you know, successfully blew up a racist monument or, you know, have all these skills and literal life experiences that can be used to promote you. So you start off at level zero working for a villain that doesn't have any powers. That's Booster. And his whole thing is stealing cars, selling them on the aftermarket. So if you're able to gain enough experience working for Booster, then when you go back to the investment league, they are going to take a look at your experience and say, hey, I think we can, you know, promote you. Let's get you a little bit better pay. Let's get you some more interesting or at least workable gear. And we'll move you up to a level one villain, somebody that has superpowers. So from there, successfully completing your objectives and the more experience you gain, eventually you're going from working to a guy who hijacks cars to working for a literal alien with like world shaking powers. And at the end of that cycle, once you reach level 5, that's when you have gained enough experience to become a villain yourself. And so that character then retires and opens up their own villainous enterprise and then starts hiring henches of their own.
I like the idea of being a guy with no powers and like, yeah, what? Hey, Jerry, who are you working for today? Oh, I'm working for Garplax, the universe eater. And it's like, hang on. Maybe don't.
I've got a car to steal at 3 p.m. Can you hold off?
Yeah, just how about you? Oh, I'm still working for Booster. You know, it's not good pay, but it's good benefits. And it's like, what do you
mean? Exactly.
What do you mean? I like the idea of like I love the visual of a guy who boosts cars who's like, I gotta get a community. I gotta get a gang together. I gotta get some employees.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm putting together a crew.
What are you doing? I'm going to steal that car over there.
Yeah. Well, he can only steal one car at a time, you know? So if he has a crew, he can steal a dozen.
That's fair, you know?
Yeah.
That's why I'm not a supervillain. I don't have the vision.
Right?
Oh, I immediately thought, I'm like, what is he going to do? Have you sit around? And you're like, no, they're going to go steal more cars. And it's like, this is how I don't know.
Yeah, that's the so there's 5 adventures in the book and one for each corresponding villain. And the first one is straight up like stealing as many cars as you can from a car convention.
See, that's just good. That's just sometimes Thanks. It doesn't need to be more complicated than just the thing. Sometimes it can just be like, yeah, what's your game? You're henchman and you got to steal a bunch of cars. That's it. Yeah. That's all you need.
Oh yeah. It's so easy to just like drop in and start playing. You know, there's not a lot of complicated rules. There's only 4 stats and you roll a D100 for everything. So it's really built around me having ADHD and not wanting to read a lot of rules and knowing that if you can get someone to sit down and be playing within 5 or 10 minutes, then you've got a good approach going.
I love TTRPGs. I love TTRPGs that are nice, good rule books, full of mechanics and player options and stuff like that. But the thing that I've found not missing in that it doesn't exist, but I feel like it's not as much of a focus for people sometimes is in board games what's called a beer and pretzels game. You know, something that's just on the table. It's something that you're playing as you're chatting and you're hanging out, and it's a background to the social thing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a game that you're playing just to give you like another thing to be doing as you're chatting. And I feel like that is a lesser explored space in TTRPGs is the sort of games that you can just, you know, you're just like, listen, you don't even need a character sheet. Just like here's an index card. Here's a piece of paper. Just write down these numbers, right? Here we go. Like we're just gonna be chatting. Sometimes you're just gonna have to roll a number and tell me if you fail. It's great. We're just gonna have And I think that's why the OSR is so big or got so big is so big because people wanted to. Well, some old guys are just old, but people liked the sort of simplicity of, you know, roll a die, I fail. You know, oh, the orc kills me. Ah, it sucks. I'm going to get a beer. You know, I think it's interesting to see these games that are exploring the space of, yeah, you just roll a die. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm definitely drawn to the beer and pretzels games these days. I definitely still play my fair share of crunchy, you know, multi supplement books, but yeah, there's just, like you said, there's something nice about just being able to like sit down and start playing, especially like if people in your friend group aren't like diehard tabletop folks. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, my goal with these games is to reach new audiences and to be able to like just pick up and play whenever, wherever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a thing I think people struggle with TTRPGs. They expect it has to be this big complicated thing, or you know, you mm-hmm. need to have all of this lore or whatever. And it's like, do you want to play TTRPGs? Cool. You work for Booster. He steals cars. You're mm-hmm. you're at the 67th, you know, Tacoma Drive Camino meetup. Mm-hmm. Here you go. You know?
Yep.
That's great. It's what makes me laugh, like comparing and contrasting board games and TTRPGs, because mm-hmm. board games run the gamut of complexity and size and weight, and I feel like everybody knows it and accepts it. Like board games have games that weren't designed but are the weight to play while you're deciding what other board game to play.
Right.
Like
right.
People have games that it's like, we'll play this and then we'll figure out what game we really want to play. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine anyone doing that. I mean, there's probably, hey, I'm going to say it and then someone's going to be like, actually, Matt, there's this really simple one. Mm-hmm. But just it's interesting to watch people cut TTRPGs down to just core mechanics, core resolution. Like, here's what we're going for. Here's how we're going to do it. Boom.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's you and your friends sitting at a table trying to tell a good story with each other. For the most part. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's only so many ways you can complicate that. If that makes sense.
Got to check my internal lore wiki. Hang on one second. I got to keep all my villains straight. So you mentioned Evil's a D100 game. Mm-hmm. And I got to ask you, Riley, what's the correct way to read a D100?
Oh, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. Do you mean like 1 to 100 or 0 to 99?
Exactly. That is the exact question.
Yeah.
What happens when you roll 00? What does that mean? What's the correct answer? You're making a judgment call here.
Yeah. Wow. I flip flop on this a lot, also because I play Mothership, which itself flip flops on that. But in this game, 000s is 100.
That's what I accept is correct, but I also always yell at people, it doesn't matter as long as everybody at the table knows what they're doing. It doesn't matter if I read it the same way as you read it, as long as you read it consistently, mm-hmm. then we're fine.
Yeah, it's funny.
I also think it's silly that it's like, no, it doesn't go to 100. I'm like, what do you mean? It does? It's a D100. It has to go to 100. D100. It has to go. There has to be 100.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's... I do flip-flop on that a lot. I get the 0 to 99 thing, and that is how I play Mothership. But yeah, every other game that uses it, I'm like, no, it's 1 to 100, please.
My buddy Ryan has made so many TikToks about it. It's become such a thing that I'm just like, oh, yeah. All right, yeah. Nerds will argue amazing. About anything, I guess. Character experience. I'm curious about this. So you mentioned, mm-hmm. like, characters have resumes. And they mm-hmm. they go back to I did catch this. They go back to Evil.
Yeah.
For job placement.
Yep.
How does that, like, I'm interested in the mechanics now. You got me interested in like the finer workings of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have four stats, D100, I assume roll under. Mm-hmm. What does the mechanical things look like from going from one tier of villain to another?
So your stats, you have energy, villainy, influence, and luck. And as you gain experience, those stats increase. And so every level, you'll get a stat boost, and then you'll get a promotion. And the promotion comes with a different gear list. So each like villain has their own gear list of stuff to take with you on your heists and things. And the way that experience is calculated is in objectives. And so every plot has different objectives. And if you succeed on all the objectives, then you level up. If you fail any objectives, then you need to go on another job. So like maybe you need to break them out of jail or, you know, find someone else at level zero to work for or something like that.
I like the idea of getting like a gear pack, like a promotion bonus or like a signing bonus where it's just like, okay, so you're working for Goraflax. Here's your laser pistol and your space mask. But then I also love the idea you said, like, if you don't get enough XP, you might have to work for another villain. Just like you have to pick up a shift on a Saturday. I really got to level up. I got to, you know.
Exactly. Well, so there is a chapter specifically built in that's like, okay, if you don't complete enough objectives to level up, your next gig is breaking your villain out of like the villain prison. Mm-hmm. And there's like a whole thing dedicated to that. So that I think is probably going to be more common than not. Mm-hmm. You know, this idea of like, well, we were, you know, everything was going really well. And then, you know, Sun Lord showed up and ruined our whole plan. And now I got to go get this guy out of prison. Cause if I don't, he's not gonna be able to sign my paycheck. You know, like, and so I find that really, really funny. This idea of like, well, shit, now I got to do another job or else I'm not going to get paid.
I like the visual of having to do that multiple times where it's just like, no, we're back here. We gotta get him. Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how many times can the Joker be broken out of, you know, Arkham? It's like, we're really leaning into classic comic tropes here.
It's the things people don't realize are that common. And I feel like comics have almost intentionally moved away from that, where it's just like the story doesn't start with like, the Joker. Right. It's just like he wasn't in prison, so he's not broken out of. He's just around. Don't worry about it. Whatever. The Joker's doing Joker stuff. Because like you said, like how many times can it be like Batman, the Joker broke out of prison? Like, can you get better funding or like
exactly.
Like
from someone who isn't me. I'm spending a lot of money on my own cave here.
Is there an oversight committee or some sort of governmental body that you know can do surveys? This feels habitual.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
But that's the beauty of comics.
A lot of that stuff.
Yeah, that's the beauty of comics. It doesn't matter. Who cares?
Exactly.
You want the Joker to do this is the thing, not to go off on a tangent. This is the thing that came up in a different. This is the thing that came up in another interview with TTRPGs. Just do the thing. I feel like I think people struggle with like they're like, oh, I want my character to do something. Or I want this to happen. And we have to figure out a way to justify it. And it's like try to do that. And if you can't do it in like 2 minutes, it happens. Whatever. Just do it. Just get moving.
I'm a big fan of the in media res openings too. You know, like you don't need a lot of preamble. You don't need to worry about the details or the logic. You just like, this is happening now.
Right.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. We're not worried about the bank robbery. The bank robbery happened. Now we're on the escape from the bank robbery. Cause that's the exciting bit. That's where.
Exactly.
That's the bit we're worried about. So let's don't worry about it. I think that's why so many people loved Blades when it came out, was it was just like, you're not gonna spend an hour coming up with a plan. Roll 4d6. It's great. It's going great. You're in there. Let's start playing.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think games do an okay job of that. But I think players struggle with that. And for whatever reason, like I don't know what it is in media or whatever that people come across that like they need this like hard like 1, 2, 3. It's like just jump to 3. It's fine.
Well, I mean, people naturally love to tell stories, so I see why it's like an instinct to have the setup and the plot and everything else like well laid out. And I think it comes down to like maybe there's not a lot of folks that have that experience of like jumping right into an action-oriented scene, you know, because let's face it, the biggest tabletop game in the world de-incentivizes that sort of thing. And so a lot of people learn to write long backstories and have slow character growth and have one person in control of like setting the scene. And so it's just not as common, I think. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, basically every player I've had who is introduced to that sort of play style is just like blown away going, oh, I didn't even know we could do that. Like, that was so fun. Yeah.
It's why I love playing with new people. Mm-hmm. Like, regardless of the game, if you can play with somebody that doesn't have a ton of experience or is brand new. I used to teach people how to play Pathfinder, and it would be like, have you played any TTRPGs? It's like, no. And they would be the best. They mm-hmm. would have the best time. Mm-hmm. Because I would always tell them, I'm like, don't look at your character sheet. We'll figure out what's on your character sheet when it comes to it. I'm like, just tell me what's going on. Tell me what you want to be doing. We'll worry about what's down there. Yeah. We'll worry about the numbers when it comes to the numbers. You, the person, tell me what you want to have going on. Because mm-hmm. I always remember this. I was at a con and this guy came in with like his friends and his girlfriend, and they sat down. And he picked up the character sheet and was like, okay, so I can do this. And, you know, and he's reading. And meanwhile, like, I'm talking to her. I'm like, yeah, so Pathfinder, you're doing this. You know, it's like this. And she was incredible because she would just be like, here's what I want to do. She's like, there's a guy. I want to go around here and I want to do this. And I was like, okay, so roll that. And then what's that? Okay, cool. Yeah. And he was so focused on the sheet that like he lost the connection from the game. And yeah, she was in it the whole time. And I'm just like, there's something there, man. I love it. Yeah. I love when people are just so keyed in.
There's something about having a list of things you can do that feels limiting to some people. Mm-hmm. So you're like, well, if I have this list, then that means I can't do anything but what's on the list. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, somebody who has no experience with games is just like, can I do this? Can I do this? I don't know. I'm just making shit up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to run games for people with no experience. At my buddy's pizza shop here in Long Beach. And it was always the same story, you know, people jumping in with zero idea of how games work and just being incentivized to make shit up and finding the joy that comes with like, oh, that's how this game works. I get it now. It's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's always great when people get it, regardless of the game that you're playing. I try not to trash talk D&D on the podcast just because I know if I do, we'll be here a little bit, you know, just to be like, I won't shy away from it, but it's just like, we'll be here so long. So, reading over the Kickstarter page for Every Villain is a Loser. It sounds like the mechanics are, and feel free to correct me if I get this wrong. Feels like the sort of gameplay loop, the moment-to-moment play, is, you know, players are doing what they're doing. They're trying to get their objectives. You know, they're trying to rob the bank, boost the cars, whatever they're doing. And uh-huh. in the background, the hero and villain are having, you know, having their back and forth, their big moments. And then the success and failure of the players dictate narratively how that conflict is going.
Yes. So there's two styles of play with or without a GM. So if you have a GM, essentially they are doing the bigger picture stuff. They're doing the villain fighting the hero. They're doing the world responding to the players. And when the players roll, what they're rolling for is narrative control. So essentially, when they roll, whether they succeed or fail, they're going to then narrate what happens next, and then the GM and the rest of the players then adapt to that. So let's say you're safe cracking at the bank and your villain and your hero are, you know, flying overhead in this big battle, taking all the attention away from you. If you succeed, then you get to narrate something your villain does to get the upper hand, something that changes the fight on the outside, as well as how you're able to crack the safe. If you fail, an obstacle is in your way. So maybe it takes too long and some guards show up and, you know, your villain gets beaten down by the hero in some way. It's really up to the players to find the most absurd, rewarding, or interesting, you know, path through. And that's what, you know, the dice are there for, is to allow them opportunities to, when they have an idea, they roll to see whether their idea is going to be successful or not and push it forward. And yeah, so without a GM, it's literally just the same thing. The whole table is responsible for coming up with, you know, what's happening in the grand scheme of things while their characters push the story forward.
What made you decide to make this a game with a GM-less option?
Games like Quiet Year or 10 Candles, where like the story is on everyone's shoulders and it's like much more collaborative, felt good to emulate in this sort of world that I was building, because there's nobody really playing the like villain, the titular villain. And so what would that look like if we all had a say in, you know, what was going on? And I just think it's more, I don't want to say bonding, but I think it's more of a, like a collaborative experience. If everyone at the table, you know, whether they are very vocal or maybe they just have, you know, one idea a session, to have the option to change the world and their characters, and have that agency and autonomy over the story. Mm-hmm.
I was actually surprised reading the Kickstarter page when it mentioned there was a GM, because like you said, like the villain is not a sort of central character. It's not a focus. It's not a focal character. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. I was actually surprised when to read it was a GM'd game. Because like you said, it feels like so naturally collaborative, and it's a very lighthearted experience. Like you're not busting out a bunch of stat blocks and all right. of this to like figure out like, oh, what's Mr. Smasho's atomic ray, you know. Mm-hmm. You're not worrying about hit point damage and all of this stuff, and so it really seemed like playing this GM-less was such a natural fit, you know. You just
absolutely
yeah. get to hang out, throw dice, and then what do our silly guys get up to?
Yeah, I mean, it was really written like initially as GM-less, and the reason I call it GM optional is because I do leave space for the type of like players who want to really settle into like the villain aspect and draw up plans. Mm-hmm. And like hold meetings and then like do a lot of prep to really like lean into like more simulationist play. But yeah, at its core, you really don't need a lot of prep or a lot of like material or a lot of mechanics or anything like that to get a game going. Mm. So yeah, I think most people will probably play without a GM. That's what the focus is.
I think it's easier to take a GM-less game and tack a GM on to it in mm-hmm. general than it is the other way. And it's been very interesting the last few years to watch the sort of like indie space explore these ideas of what does a game without a GM look like, what do those mechanics mm-hmm. look like, what are the like players at the table doing, stuff like that. Yeah, so stuff that's like, okay, all of us are, because first of all, the GM is a player. If I can, let's mm-hmm. start that. Mm-hmm. They're just playing a different game. But it's been very interesting to watch people see people explore the space of like, what does a game look like without a GM? How do we establish fairness in a space mm-hmm. like that? Because I think that's a lot of people's immediate concern, or right. maybe that's not how they phrase it, right? But I think there's a lot of like, you know, how do we ensure that everyone at the table is treated fairly? How do we make sure that everybody's on the same page? How do we make sure that everybody's kind of doing things equally? Mm-hmm. And so it's been interesting to see in the rise of solo games, solo plus games, GM-less games, all of the mechanics and ideas and design work to come out of it. Mm-hmm. And this is me being a little catty. It makes older games feel a little stale by comparison, only in that they're using mechanics that were designed, you know, 50 years ago in mm-hmm. a lot of ways. And, you know, a lot of people have come up with a lot of cool ways to spin those mechanics and a lot of cool ideas to introduce around those mechanics. But I can't help but look at some of the older games and go, you know, and not have that same excitement in some ways.
Totally. Yeah, I get what you mean.
Yeah. Especially, like we said earlier, with everything coming out for Zine Month, just wild ideas, wild concepts of just like, what if this? What if this? What if this?
Yeah, I'm always constantly impressed by the stuff that comes out every year. It's really just a joy to spend an entire paycheck on.
It's a thing I've had to be very aware of, especially around stuff like Zine Month, where I'm like, okay, what's going right now? How many are out there? Okay, let's be careful. And then you get those emails of like, well, this launched and this launched and this launched and this has 48 hours left and this is 48 and this is as an update. And oh my goodness, you get an update for something that you forgot you backed a year ago. That's like, okay, these are shipping. And you're like, oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah. I think I backed like 100 projects in 2021 and I'm still not sure what half of them even were. Like, sometimes something will show up and I'm like, oh shit, look at this. I got a book from my past.
Right. Oh, good job, me. It's a present. Great.
Yeah. It's pretty funny.
I'm both glad and sad that I've done a pretty good job of not doing that the last couple years. Because there was definitely a time when I had an office job that it would just be like, oh, that looks cool. And then 18 months, what is this? What's happening? Who are you? Oh, hey, the book.
Yeah.
Or some huge board game box shows up that I'm like, uh-oh, this doesn't.
Yeah, I've definitely had to be more picky as the years go by, but it's a shame because there's so much good stuff that I want to have and hold that I settle for PDFs instead.
I'm loving the push in a lot of these, especially like Zine Month projects, but also in, you know, various crowdfunding flavors of people working to get their stuff physically. You know, I think there's a lot to be said of, if you want to make a game, do it however you want. You know, arguably put it as a PDF, make it, be done with it. But it's been really amazing to see people put all this work in to make a thing.
Yeah.
You know, and such a different thing to be like, this thing.
Yeah. To have it in your hands. Yeah. I talk about that a lot. That's literally how my first book was made too. Like, I wrote it for my GM. A friend and I were in a Curse of Strahd campaign for a few years, and our GM was incredible storyteller and just one of the best players I've ever come across in my life. And he was obsessed with wilderness survival. And so we would just stay up all night, like talking back and forth, like, oh, what would a game look like if we wanted to like give him a wilderness survival game as a gift? And we made Castaway, and it had such a profound impact on our GM. And he was just begging us, like, put this out into the world, like, please do something with this. And we're like, are you sure? Like, we kind of just like cobbled it together so that you could run a session or two for us. Like, you really think it's that good? And he's like, absolutely. Like, you have to put it out. And I still didn't believe him, but I put it out for Zine Month and went to sleep and woke up the next day and it had funded like 1,000%. And I didn't even have an audience. I made up, you know, the company name like the day before, you know, like, everything together. And yeah, it was a trip. It literally took like probably a year or two before I realized, oh, you know what, this is actually a good game. And he was right to make us like publish it, because I really enjoy it.
I love that. I love the idea of 2 months after that being like, I guess this is good.
Oh yeah. It fully took me like a year to appreciate it. I was so fed up with looking at like the files when I was making it that I deleted everything off of my computer. And I was like, I never want to see this game again. And I was like, it's the first time I ever wrote anything. And I would tell people like, oh, I'm not a writer. I just wrote one thing, blah, 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 and be like stupid and self-deprecating. But then like, I don't know. I just kept hearing good things about it and it kept doing well. And I finally opened it, you know, like a year later and just read like I was reading someone else's game for the first time. And I was really impressed to pat put myself on the, you know,
put a post-it note that says like some other game.
Yeah.
Oh, this is Spencer Campbell's new game. That's what I'm reading. This isn't my game.
This isn't my game. Exactly. Yeah, no, I was like, oh, I guess I did do pretty well. You know, I've obviously learned a lot about writing and editing and layout and everything else since then. But for a first effort, a 60 day challenge, we wrote it start to finish in 60 days and had it released in 60 days. You know, for that sort of challenge, I'm really happy with how it came out.
That's really cool. And I think that's the strength of Zine Month, is the idea of having it done, right? Mm-hmm. Is saying make something here. It's done. Put it out. You know, make the thing. Mm-hmm. And I think, like I mentioned, like I think that's why so many people's first thing is for Zine Month, is because it helps it go from being, oh, I'll do it a game. I have this idea. It could be this. When, like we talked about, someone says, here's what you need to know. Here's the layout PDF. Put all it in here. Here's the website to get, like, copyright free images. Boom, boom, boom. Here's, you know, talk to this
a
guy about layout.
Work has been laid for you.
Yeah. When all of that road is paved and ready to go, you know, it takes out so much of that you can just be like, oh, yeah. Oh, I made a game. Oh, shit. Oh, we're already done. And I think that's great. Like, I think helping people just get that idea out of their head is amazing. Like, even if it's the only thing they ever do, even if they go, oh, yeah, I just got this idea and I did it and that's great and that's fun and you know, whatever. I think so many people don't want to. And I think this is just a thing with artistic pursuits. I think people get so in their own head about the quality of a thing and whether it's good and whether they're worthy and whether it should exist and all of this, that I think, and this isn't like people are stupid and should do this. Just I want one of my goals with this podcast in general is to help people like get that. It's like, no one knows what they're doing. Nobody knows. Nobody, the person that you respect the most, like think of the person that wrote your favorite TTRPG, whoever that person is. There was a time when that person had no clue what they were doing, and they did, and they wrote that, they created that, they put that out, and now they slightly know more, but still mostly don't know what they're doing. Most of us don't know what we're doing most of the time,
right?
And that shouldn't stop you from doing the thing that you want to do. And especially in a creative pursuit, a creative endeavor, just do the thing.
I completely agree. And I would even add to that too, like something I talk a lot about is the last 5%. People very often will bring something to 95% completion and then agonize over perfecting it. And I tell people all the time, I'm like, if you're at 95%, it's finished. Mm-hmm. Like you're done. Because yeah, like whether it's music or books or video games, even I'll play a video game, get up to the last boss and then put it down forever. I don't know why I do that.
You're not the only person I've heard say that.
Yeah. And it's the same thing with creating things, you know, like I write a lot of music too, and I'll work on the same song for years and then just be like, ah, I don't know what it's missing. And it's like, no, fuck that. Like, just call it done and move on to the next thing, because finishing something is really like the part that the muscle that you need to train. So yeah.
And it,
a lot of people get caught up on the perfectionism.
And I think it's that 5% that really drives people nuts. Like you said, like they get stuck on it being perfect, on it being just right, on it being exactly what it needs to be or whatever. When it's like, but hey, what if it was done?
Yeah.
What it, you know, you could always do another one.
Yeah. You know? You could always do a second edition or make edits or whatever. Like, I've done plenty of that. And I know lots of people have, you know, put out updated versions of their games and stuff. You can always do that, but it's going to be so much more difficult to even identify where to go if it's not out and in front of people and getting feedback. And, you know, it's just about finishing, I think, is a really big, important part of it.
It's why I've loved I've loved itch.io. I love what it's done for the indie scene for both video games and TTRPGs, because there's nothing more enjoyable than going to someone's itch page of like, oh, this person wrote this game, come check this out, and checking out their game and then be like, oh, what else have they written? And they've just written like five or six just like one page things, or like small pamphlet games, or just really just like, here's an idea.
Yeah.
And we did it
out there.
There it is. And it honestly looks more impressive to be like, here's a bunch of small ideas that I had that are just kind of like there, and maybe it'll be more things. Like, I've seen people the last year, I've seen a few people have small ideas that they put on itch and then go, you know, I want to expand this. I want to make this a bigger thing. I want to give this like not an expansion, but like literally just make more of this thing, make, you know, more bigger page count, more options, whatever.
Totally. Yeah.
And that's great. Like, I think it's a thing that I'm trying to get into my own head as much as anything else. And it's so much easier for me to tell you to do it than it is for me to tell me to do it.
Yeah. That's why community works so well. I mean, when we're all, you know, pushing each other, it's going to be a lot easier to grow. It's the same, like cooking is a big thing. I love cooking for people. And then when I'm hungry, I'm like, I guess I'll just heat up a pizza. I don't know.
I'll just eat this dirt, whatever. I love cooking. Cooking is another thing I get really on my soapbox of like, you just gotta do it, and there's that line from Adventure Time of like, sometimes getting good at something is being bad at it for a while. And it's like, you will be bad at cooking for a while, it'll happen, but you on the other side of that is being good at it.
Yeah, and that applies to everything. You got to be willing to be bad at something if you ever want to be good at it. It's so true.
And it's hard, you know. It feels you know, I hope, you know, I'm certainly not meaning to be. I doubt you are as well. I doubt either of us are meaning to be callous about it. But it's just like it is hard. It is difficult to say when a thing is done, or to push through, when something is difficult to finish or get there. But it's the, like you said, it's the finishing that will help you develop that. The more things that you say, okay, I'm done, the easier. Not only knowing where that spot is, but then saying, oh, you know what? I'm getting in my head about this. I'm just going to have this be done, and I'm going to put it out there, and then I can come back to it in 3 months if I decide I want to. Or, you know, or this is done and it's done. And maybe I never think about it again. Like you said, maybe I delete all the files off of my computer and I never look at it again.
Maybe.
And guess what? It just lives there and we never talk about it. I like the idea. I said this to somebody else. I like the idea of someone putting a game on their itch and then never talking about it. I'm just like, I made that game.
I do that. It's so hard for me to market stuff. But yeah, I'm definitely guilty of that.
somebody was, I've seen two different people now on my Blue Sky talk about people mentioning to them that they weren't aware of their new projects. And it's like, all they've been doing is talking about these projects, and it's
just like constantly.
Right. And it's not like, man, that person's so stupid. It's just like, it's wild the ways that stuff fails to penetrate, like, regardless. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, and I think there's a lot to be said about how social media works, which there's a lot of stuff there. But then I think there's also just a lot of the ways that, like, ideas don't latch sometimes, you know, like I think it's kind of a consequence of the internet and social media, is that we're inundated with so much stuff that it's really difficult for us even cognizantly, intentionally, I'll use the word that I know how to say, intentionally focus on the stuff that's important. You know, and that's why, like, people will be like, here's my social media, here's my newsletter, here's this other thing, because the more ways that you're able to tell people about the thing, especially if it's like your livelihood, the more likely you are to remember and go, oh, hey, actually, I saw they had a thing. And it's just it's got to be wild for people who, I mean, for people like you that are like, I made a project. Here it is. For the love of God, someone look at it. Please,
someone look at it.
Right. Please look at it. Please give me money for the thing that I did. It's good. It's very good. I promise you, it's very good.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just checking my dashboard because of what you were saying right now. And I was curious, like, I had almost 200 people following before the campaign launched. And it looks like at least 3/4 of the people who are currently backing it have no idea who I am.
That's wild.
It's all from discovery, from like newest category or games category, or just straight up the Zine Quest landing page, no referring any of that stuff. So it's like, yeah, the people who are like opening my emails or the people who were already following ahead make up such a small portion. I find that fascinating.
Right. And it's not a like a condemnation or like, oh, this is wrong or anything. It's just, it's wild to be able to see how, regardless of how much effort you put into to marketing and engagement and all of this, something as simple as the people that go to Kickstarter every day, I guess, and go like, what's new in games? Or, you know, people saying, hey, there's Zine Month. Look at the Zine Month page, and seeing the Zine Month page and clicking through and doing whatever. It's so interesting.
Yeah, it's just fascinating, you know, and it's really good data to have when you're like thinking about marketing your stuff, because I'm constantly having to switch tactics and switch social medias and like all these different, you know, platforms that we have, and just being like, what's going to work today? I have no idea.
Have you considered like a big sandwich board and a bullhorn? Just like,
I think that would get
outside
a pretty good amount. Yeah. Maybe I'll print out like a big QR code and bring it to my shows, you know? Like, hey, if you like my music, you might like my books.
There was an indie game dev on TikTok that did that. She just printed out like a big board with a QR code and went and stood out on the street and was like, do you want to play my game? And I was like,
hell yeah.
Listen, trying everything. I respect it. Like,
yeah, it might work.
You know, some people, I remember she did a TikTok talking. She did a TikTok, obviously, of like, look at what I'm doing. This is wild. And then was like, OK, so here's how that went. And she said a couple people were really interested in it. And I was like, sometimes that's what it takes, you know?
Yeah, you got to get creative.
Never doubt a guy. Listen, they wouldn't pay people to spin signs if the guy spinning signs wasn't effective.
Yeah, exactly.
You might drive by and go like, I know there's an H&R Block here. What are you telling me for? And then someone else is going to drive by and be like, oh, holy shit, H&R Block.
Exactly.
That's
so true.
That's how it works. We talked at the top about the art in this game and the fantastic style. The last person I interviewed about their game was very fresh off of seeing something on Blue Sky with art. And I think I want to make it at least a regular TTRPG, you know, a designer question. And it was basically talking about people's tendency to not ignore, but sort of sideline and not give proper credit to internal art in a TTRPG. And I think there's a lot of things that go along with this. This is going to be kind of like a weird open-ended question, because it's just like art. what art? And what are your thoughts on art, on like art and TTRPGs? How much importance do you place on art? What role do you think art has? This feels like very hoity-toity questions, but I'm very curious about like people's thoughts about this.
Yeah, I'll answer from two perspectives. From a personal perspective, as someone with aphantasia, I find art to be extremely important. For example, when I was running a game and my players said, oh, we want to get horses. What do these horses look like? I had to go to Google and image search horses to be able to describe to them, like, how long a horse's mane would be or what color it might be or, you know, all the visual details they were looking for, because I cannot conjure that image. So a game with evocative art helps me a great deal to understand the setting and the tone and, you know, the characters and everything else. Obviously, it can be limiting if you're like, I could imagine this person to be any which way, and now that I see them represented, they're only ever going to look like that. I do get that, but yeah, for me personally, I think it helps a lot. When I think of it as a creator and as a marketer, I find it a lot less important. Obviously, a lot of people will make purchasing decisions based on art alone, and I have definitely done that many times. But as we've seen with literal books like novels, mm-hmm. or The Isle, which is a recently artless tabletop adventure that's super incredible, it's a lot more important to have good writing. And what happens a lot of times is someone will find a really good, you know, artist and fill their book with a lot of incredible, eye-catching, evocative art, and then completely forget that they need to support that art with their text. And that happens constantly. And there's nothing worse than, you know, spending a bunch of money on an art book and taking it home and being like, well, I can't even use this because the game is unplayable. Mm. You know, I've run into that situation more times than I'd like to admit. But yeah, I think art is important for marketing, and I think it's important for people like me who kind of enjoy seeing games and worlds represented in ways that they can't represent themselves. But I wish that more attention were paid to content, like, in the text and in the mechanics and in stuff like that, because that's really what you're interfacing with the most. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be dedicating a few hours of your day to, you know, running a game or experiencing a game, you know, you can't do that with just the art. So.
Yeah. And you really nailed, like, my two thoughts on it. And it's why I think, like, it's an interesting discussion. It's an interesting, like, thought experiment to be like, just think about this. And because I, you know, like you said, I think, you know, having art in a book is great for establishing tone specifically, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, would people have reacted to Morkborg as strongly as they did if it didn't have that art and conceptually layout? I think layout mm-hmm. probably more so than art. But, you know, would people have had the same reaction? Would have had caught in the same way? Mm-hmm. But exactly like you said, the text is what you're here for. You know, the art is, you know, in the first bit, I was like, the art is superfluous in a way, mm-hmm. but not superfluous. You know what I mean? It is both important and unimportant for the game. And I think
it's important yet not necessary.
Right. It's right. It's, yeah. it's a very important balance where it's like, could you make a game with no art? Sure. Mm-hmm. And I think how important art is in that discussion depends on the form that your game takes and the way that you market your game and what your product is. Cause maybe it's not even a game. Maybe it's an adventure. Maybe it's a setting. Maybe it's a mm-hmm. pamphlet. And then what art you have where becomes more important than do you have art? A great example someone told me was, you know, they were talking about like Honey Heist, like Grant Howard's one page, like there's one piece of art in that, and it's a little pen drawing of a bear with a hat.
Bear. Yeah,
and that's it. That's kind of all you need. But I think, as you said, it establishes the tone so well that it's like, okay, it's a bear in a hat.
Yeah,
there you go.
I do want to harp on really quickly too. I don't know if you're familiar with there are textless adventures. So it's like a whole spread that's just one big art piece, and it's an adventure that you can run based on just like whatever jumps out at you, sort of like a Rorschach test. And while I find that exercise to be very creative and very interesting, it's not something I would ever use. And like, I'm so sorry to the people who are watching this that made those. They're so dear to me. But yeah, it's more of an interesting like experiment, I think, that just can't really be a widespread like tool. And so when you think of it that way, it's like, if I have a book with no art, it's pretty easy for me to understand what's going on. I read a lot of books and almost none of them have any art at all. And some of them don't even have art on the covers. You know, it's just a title. And I've never had a problem with that, but I do, have trouble with like specifically in games, interfacing with something that has no text. And that's just maybe because I'm used to reading and interpreting text more than I am interpreting art. But at the same time, I decorate my room with lots of art that doesn't have any text on it. And, you know, I have no problem interpreting that. So I don't know. It's just an interesting concept to think about.
Yeah, the post sort of like stuck with me. You know, I read it and was like, I understand where they're coming from, because it was someone who does like art for RPGs and was like, it's cool that someone is covering the game that I did art for and never mentions my art. And I'm like, I absolutely get where they're coming from. And then also my brain just spun off on all of these things of like, how important is art in a game? How important is it to talk about it? And all of these things. And so I'm like, I got to ask everybody about this, because I feel like a lot of people will answer similarly to this, because I feel like a lot of people who make TTRPGs or make work like understand that like, yeah, art is cool. Like you said, it is good. It is not required. But I also really want to talk to somebody who does layout or like an art director for like for like a game line. Because I'm very curious what that process is for somebody like Magpie or Evil Hat or somebody who's like, yeah, we've got to like commission some pieces. It's a whole thing. And
I mean, yeah, speaking as a layout designer on that, I think the flow of information is such an important like concept that I'm only just now starting to see like gain widespread popularity among indie creators. You know, I would say like study restaurant menus and like things like that for good information design, but you know, newspaper advertisements and stuff like that are also really good. But yeah, a lot of times people are like, oh, I'm just going to throw some art in there and then put the text around it and then go. And then you'll be reading the book and be like, I can't like understand where this is going because it's laid out in such a way that's like confusing. So yeah, I think talking to someone who does layout or like art direction for, you know, much larger companies would be really interesting to get their perspective on that.
I think layout is a thing that I think people who don't make TTRPGs don't consider how important layout is and don't realize how important layout is to whether or not you can engage really well with a book.
Exactly.
And I think It's, and I'm not going to put anybody on blast for bad layout, because it happens to, you know, all kinds of people every day. But I wonder how many people have realized where they're just like, yeah, I just couldn't get into that game, when the problem that they had was they were having trouble understood, like the flow of information, like you said, they were having trouble parsing it. Right. Like just literally getting the text into their brain in a way that like they could digest it. They could understand this is one bit. This is one bit. This is the next bit.
Mm-hmm.
It was really funny. Tyler Crumrine put on Blue Sky the other day, the update to the game that they have coming out, that's in like, you know, like
Realis.
Beta. Yeah, Realis. Mm-hmm. He was like, yeah, he's like, I'm going to be adding a table of contents to the PDF soon, because
I didn't know it even needed it.
Yeah, I just didn't. He's like, I just didn't think of it. I think that's so funny. I think it's so funny to be like, yeah, oops, my bad.
I think we were going back and forth on that with the details of our escape too, when we were in the middle of that project.
Mm.
Just like, do we put a table of contents? Like, yeah, probably doesn't need it. It's only like 40 pages. Who cares?
I think there's arguments to be had either way. I think there's definitely a conversation of like, once you reach a certain size, it becomes a little more important.
Yeah.
I think more games should have PDF bookmarks, maybe more than like a table of content.
Agreed.
I'll
more into the PDF bookmarks.
I'll fight that fight. What was I talking about the other day? An index.
Mm-hmm.
An index would be very helpful, because nerds are nerds and like to reference things.
Yeah,
and making those reference things easier for everybody is better overall.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the last question, as we're getting to the end here, I always have a question that I hit everybody with. And first of all, and so that I don't forget, Riley, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you again for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate everybody. I say this every time. I appreciate anybody who takes time out of their incredibly busy schedule doing all of this Kickstarter stuff. I'm asking you to give me some of your time during the most stressful moments.
Mm-hmm.
So I greatly appreciate everybody. So this is the three question. First episode, I asked somebody what their top favorite three something was, as just like a here's how to end the episode. And it was such a treat. I enjoyed it so much. I was like, I'm gonna do this every time. So what I do is during the episode, I think of what the three question is. I don't come into it with it. I try to let it develop organically, something that's interesting.
Love it.
And so this might be a little tricky. And so if we have to do some research, that's fine. Riley, what are your three favorite Golden Age supervillains?
Oh man, I do have a list somewhere.
Everybody's got lists, man. Everybody's got. I'm like, I'm gonna hit them with something. They might not. Yeah. They might not. They'll have one. They might not have three. No, fucking everybody's got a list.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is just in the what do you call it? Like the reference material stuff that we were going back and forth. I think number one's gotta be Riddler. I just love everything about Riddler.
That's fair. That's a very Golden Age guy. That's just like, what does he do? He tells riddles.
Ooh. He tells riddles. Yeah. And then do you know Dr. Psycho?
Isn't that that's the guy from the Rob Zombie movies.
No,
that's a joke.
It's a Wonder Woman enemy.
Dr. Psycho. They made a guy called Dr. Psycho.
Dr. Psycho, yeah.
Wow. That's what he looks like. Yep.
He looks like a psycho. But yeah, basically his whole thing is like he had this mental breakdown crisis or whatever, and became a telepath and is able to enter people's dreams. And there's a lot of really interesting stuff. I'm like obsessed with dreams and the dream world and all of that. So that really resonated with me as I was reading.
That's a good like medium power scale power too.
Yeah. Yeah.
you can do some wild stuff with it, but it's not like ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I like mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. And then not necessarily a super villain, but a villain nonetheless. I just love Catwoman because it's the modern day Robin Hood type of situation.
Yeah.
You know, she's a little scandalous, not really hurting anybody. You know, even the heroes are kind of like, okay, Catwoman, like, just don't let me catch you again. Like, you know,
you stole those gems. You better not do it again.
Yeah.
I gotta go stop Joker. He's poisoning all of Gotham. So don't steal that necklace.
Exactly. The relationship that Catwoman has with all these heroes is like fascinating to me because it's like, oh yeah, you can like do bad things and not be a bad person. You know, that's one of the villains that really, I think, explores that topic well. Yeah. So I think those would be my top three.
Yeah, I like that. I was definitely expecting you to be like, oh yeah, Mr. Phantasmo from this weird, you know, some weird comic that ran for 7 issues in the 40s.
Yeah, Mr. Mixels or whatever his name is.
Yeah, just somebody's just like, yeah, he's got like a wizard hat, and yeah, he has like a joy buzzer.
Or Killer Moth, that's a good one.
Oh, that is a good one.
Yeah,
there were so many. They were just all animals. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
They really were just
Golden Age stuff was just really straightforward. It's if you go a little earlier into like the Silver Age stuff, that's when everything was just like spaghetti on the wall weirdness. Mm-hmm. And then they realized they're like, oh, we can just look around and be like, moth. Okay, guy who's a moth. Lamp. Okay, guy who controls lights. it's just like so much easier. And I think that's why it ushered in the Golden Age, because it was a lot more digestible.
Yeah, it's when you remember that they had like a week to make these things. Mm-hmm. Like they were cranking them out on newsstands every week. So when you're like, man, Killer Moth, get it together, guys. You're like, they were just, like you said, spaghetti at the wall. They were just like, whatever. This Tiger Man, Lion Man, yeah, Tiger Lady, Panther Man. We're on a run. Keep it going, guys. Gorilla Man.
Wasn't there a guy whose whole deal was like allergies?
I would bet. As someone who's read like a lot of old Spider-Man and like some of the older Marvel stuff, yeah, I would absolutely believe that there's a guy who just gave you allergies.
Yeah. Condiment King.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Ketchup and Mustard Man. I love Ketchup and Mustard Man. Yeah. He's like my favorite guy. Yeah, they renamed him because Ketchup and Mustard Man is too stupid.
Right. Yeah, he was just like causing anaphylactic shock with his weapons.
Yeah, it's
ridiculous.
That's such a ridiculous idea. That's such a ridiculous comic thing too. Of like, what's the villain? Oh, he shoots you with condiments so that you break out in hives.
You go into anaphylactic shock.
Maybe so one good. Of the most dangerous villains, like it's actively true. More dangerous than Catwoman. Catwoman will just steal your jewels
and your heart. Let's be real.
And your heart. You're not wrong. Oh goodness, Riley! Thank you so much again for being on the show. It's always,
of course,
it's these are always such a treat. Always hit that moment in the middle where it's just like, this is what I do now. This is just the rest of my life is talking to Riley about games and comics and whatever.
Love it.
More than happy to have you on whenever you've got a thing going on.
Awesome.
If you, I'll give you a second here at the end. Just you know, a quick sign off, a little recap. As always, link to Kickstarter campaign, Afterthought Committee, Itch page, all of Riley's stuff will be in the show notes. Everything we talked about will be linked in the show notes. So anything that you could possibly want linked, check those show notes. But Riley, go ahead.
Thank you again so much. I have been Riley Coyote, the creative mind behind Afterthought Committee. And I really want you to check out Every Villain is a Loser. I've been working on it for a couple years, and it's about ready to be revealed to the world, and I really want you to be a part of it. So click on that Kickstarter link and show some support.
Hell yeah. I love it. I haven't heard back yet on like people's click-throughs for this, but I really hope that getting out talking about it is getting people to check out these projects. So fingers crossed.
Yeah. We'll see.
But that's the end. Riley, go ahead and say goodbye to everybody.
Bye.
And that's been the episode. I want to thank Riley so much for making time, sitting down and chatting with me. As I've said, it's always so cool. People that are, you know, in such a busy time are willing to sit down, talk to y'all about the game, talk to me about the game. You know, I view myself as a facilitator for the conversation, but, you know I said it, but I'll say it again. All the links to everything we talk about, all of Riley's stuff, all of the Kickstarter links and all that can be found in the show notes. You go down there, you can find links to each page, social media, Kickstarter pages, whatever. Everything is down in that show notes. I want to thank everybody for supporting on Patreon. I'm actually going to announce here officially that I'm going to change the Patreon tiers. I've been thinking about it a lot lately, and I feel weird charging for the video versions of the episode. I think I'm just going to start putting the video versions up on YouTube. That is how the podcast is going to live on YouTube. I want people to be able to experience these interviews and all of that freely and easily, since I view this as, essentially marketing for the thing, and that's fine. That's my goal with this. It feels weird to charge for a different version. It's bugged me the last couple days, and I gave it a real thought. So by the time you hear this, the video versions of the podcasts will be available on YouTube. That'll be linked somewhere in the show notes on the website, all that stuff. The Patreon is just going to be, hey, come support because you like the thing. The links for the social pages for me and the show will be down in the show notes. And if you have any comments or feedback, you can email feedback@mattcalder.com. Let me know what you like, what you didn't like, what you want to see me add, not do anymore, any of that stuff. You just want to tell me that you think the show is cool. That's great. That'd be the coolest email to read. Oh my God, that would make my week. But with that, I've been Matt. Thank you again for listening and have a great day.